Yeah, well, that's good, because I've been retired for 3-4 years, you know. And if you just sort of hanging around, wait for her to get through, so you'll do some traveling.
She was a good magistrate, huh?
Yeah, you know, she didn't have a legal training, but she's very conscientious and thoughtful.
She's fair. She's got a lawyer to succeed her.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. We have members present, Senator Lyson, Senator Pichot, Senator Coghill, Judge Stewart, Representative Furness, and Margie McNeil, you're on the line?
Thank you, Mike.
Oh, Swack, you were hiding there. And we also have Representative Swackhammer, who I ignored. For the meeting today, we're going to go over proposed House bill legislation on the ethics, some changes to the ethics law, and also we're going to get a short report from Yada Pittman, who did a revision to the code of the standards of conduct handbook. I think we might as well take that first. And you maybe speak to the changes. There's not many changes to this, but it's just an update with the advisory opinions included in it. And I'd like to go ahead and take that. And I think Jack has another conflict here at 9:15, so we'll take that and we'll go right to the legislation and anything else you want to bring up. And I guess Irene is not on yet, but Irene, and when she does come on, we'll just hopefully she can just break in and let us know. Okay, Margie, do you have the standards of conduct handbook with you, or do you have access to it there?
Yeah, I have access to it.
Okay, very good. Ida, do you want to speak to this, your work here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, because of the time constraints, we stuck to precisely the same format that we used last year. And because there were not very many advisory opinions issued in 89, it was fairly simple. We simply went through the four that had been issued the first part of the year, the two that were approved at the last meeting, and stuck to precisely the same format where we mentioned them in the listing that goes by subject matter. Most of the opinions had to do with gifts in this last year. Which means that they also, most of the changes ended up in the same section of the book, and then in the reference material in the back of the book, tried to keep a running chronology of the opinions that have been issued, and did all of that so that we simply used the same material from the previous year for the older opinions and added in the new material.
Okay, thank you. In the book, it shows where the new opinions were added, and I don't really think it takes the committee approval, but I just want to bring it to the committee members' attention. And we'll go ahead and...
Where's the index, Mr. Chairman? Chairman, where is the index on those new opinions in this page number?
B1, I think, in the back, huh?
Is it A?
The arrows on?
C1.
It's
page C1, clear in the back. Okay.
That was B1, isn't it?
B1. No.
Those are advisory
opinions. B6, I think. B6, B5, and B6 shows you the new, some of the opinions.
B1.
B1 is the opinions.
Okay. Got you, Judge. Advisory. Here we are. You don't have a copy of this. You have another copy of this. Here you go. You don't have copies of what?
This doesn't have any ethics.
We're not here.
Yeah.
We'll let people take a look at here, see if there's any questions.
Okay, fine.
So what are we doing now?
I'm just bringing it to the committee's attention. Oh, we did an update on it, so you just know that we're going to go ahead and print it here. I don't think it really takes committee approval, but I just want to show you that we did an update to that with the new opinions, or the opinions that were issued last year. And it shows in the handbook the new additions.
I see, with the arrows on it.
That's correct. Senator Burchell.
Can I ask Theda a question?
Absolutely.
Theda, was there any discussion? Did you add any discussion anywhere?
The middle of the book.
That's Irene Creighton.
15.
Just a minute. Theda, Irene is now online here. And Irene, we were discussing the changes to the handbook. Go right ahead, Theda.
Yeah, let me see if I can find the. I think in the new edition that the page number, the section on gifts, I think starts on page 15. And actually, it isn't until you get into page 16, about the middle of the page, where we start to get where there's just the summary of opinion 89.6, and then following on to page 17. That was the biggest section. And then on page 19, having to do with representation, at the top of the page.
You know, if it's the wish of the committee, we may want to just walk through all the changes. It wouldn't take more than 5 minutes. Would the committee members wish to do that? If there's any questions?
I think it's advisable.
That's fine, whatever.
We should know. This will be, it's German scriptural inference. I think it would be advisable just to make sure that if this is going to go into print, since we're somewhat responsible ultimately for what it does, to make sure we know what's in there.
Okay. Theda, why don't we do that? Representative Burns would like to just walk through the changes in the book. That shouldn't take very long at all. Just
okay, sure. Let me find a page number for a second here. If I can start at the beginning. Okay, page 14 is the section that deals with discussion of advisory opinions relating to conflicts of interest. The top of page 14 is advisory opinion 89.5, which has to do with a request from a legislative aide about accepting part-time employment.
Okay. No, just go ahead and continue.
Okay, and then page 16... About two-thirds of the way down the page starts with reimbursement by a union to a legislative member. That's opinion 89.6. And following after that is 89.1 and 89.3. And after that, the opinion about the ring. Some more discussion of that.
Go ahead.
And then representation on the top of page 19. Second paragraph, disclosure representation board for state agency. This was the opinion where the person is a legal partner, a salaried associate of a covered person, and is not in any way involved with the person's legislative duties.
Okay.
And then in the appendix, B, as in boy, is intended to be a quicker way for people to look at the opinion, get a reference number, and go read it if it's about a topic that they are particularly interested. So on B3, you have the reference to 89.5, conflicts of interest. And on B5, you have the references to the 89 opinions about gifts. And on B5, also, you have the reference to representation before state agency. And those are just meant to be kind of a quick reference schedule. I also asked the staff of the Alaska Public Officers Commission to update the listings on pages 26 and 27, which have to do with boards and commissions, which have to file conflict of interest statements, and municipalities, which are exempt from conflict of interest statements. And those are reference material so that people who are covered by the standards of conduct law will have some idea whether someone else fits into a category with whom they have to make some kind of a disclosure. I think that if you, Mr. Chairman, if I might, if you get into another year or two where you have a heavy load of advisory opinions, then you may want to look at some more substantive changes to the format. Because the more references you get, the harder it is for people to sift through them and find the ones that really apply to them. But I think it certainly holds up well for this year and might serve you for next year as well.
Okay, thank you, Theda. Is there any questions on this, the revisions? Okay, Theda, I don't know if you want to stay on the line and on the discussion that we're going to have. You're welcome to listen in if you'd like. Irene, yeah, welcome to the teleconference. Are you there, Irene?
You at all?
Can you hear us, Irene?
How are you?
You're coming through very faintly.
How bad?
Is there another phone you could use?
Try again.
Okay.
Why don't you check and see if that's her that came on? Can she just come back on? Irene, are you on now?
No, she just hung up. She's going to redial.
Okay. Well, while we're waiting for Irene to come back, maybe you might want to take a look at the draft, and we'll discuss that with John here in just a minute.
Joanne, the teleconference moderator?
I'm here. Does that sound any better?
Yes, you're coming through loud and clear now.
Okay, one thing I need to have you do is to check with me, because last time I was on teleconference, I couldn't be heard, and then I got unplugged, and I didn't have a number to call back. So you need to check in with me. If you haven't heard from me for a while, please check in with me.
Okay, next time we certainly will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll do that, Irene. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, very good, Irene. Thank you for calling back. Okay, Irene, we're going to... Do you have the proposed House bill, the changes to the ethics law?
I do.
Okay, very good.
Mr. Chairman, I don't mean to interrupt, but does there need to be some action by motion on the revised standards of conduct handbook?
Could be.
I don't think it's necessary, but it certainly could be. We could.
Just to cover it, I move that we accept the revised standards of conduct handbook that we have just reviewed, the January 1990 edition, as a publication of the committee.
Okay. Is there any objection to the motion by Judge Stewart to the changes in the standards of conduct handbook? Is there any objection to the motion? Okay, there's no objection that stands as approved. Okay, thank you, Judge Stewart. Okay, now we have before us this draft then of changes to the ethics law. And we do have a letter from Mr. Finkelstein, Representative Finkelstein as well. But let's go ahead and take up these changes. There's some possible drafts or I guess A, B, and C on some of these, and we'll let John speak to those, I suppose. But what I'd like to do is just go section by section and see if we have a consensus on the adoption of these, each one of these components to the legislation. We might as well just start with Section 1. And this was discussed, I believe, in our last meeting, and some people felt that it was a good idea, and other people had some other opinions about it. But let's go ahead and see how people feel about that. And John, if you want to speak to any of these, that's fine as well, or if people had some questions.
Just one comment on Section 1. Because of this, the placement here, there's no definition of lobbyist needed. You would incorporate the definition of lobbyist in the Regulation of Lobbying Act.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have a question.
Senator Eisen.
When this bill is introduced, I assume it's going to be handled like any other bill. Is that correct?
That's correct. It'll be.
We'll have opportunity to make amendments in committees.
That's correct. It'll be introduced. I believe it'll go to Judiciary Committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Furness.
Yes, I draw the members' attention to page 14 of the revised handbook. I just noticed a section here, it looked like there was an opinion 8810, a retired legislator who applies prior to the end of the legislative term for position as a school district lobbyist is not in violation of the Code of Ethics, so long as a public official is not used to influence the hiring decision, et cetera, et cetera. So I assume by the passage of this subsection C that this would no longer apply.
Well, Representative Furness, I'm pretty sure if we adopt some of these changes, we're going to have to make changes to the handbook at some point.
My point is, I just wanted to make sure that if that did take place,
it is.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Any other comments on Section 1? I believe this would parallel federal law anyway that people are, and also administrative, it would parallel federal law. But John, did you, in your research, where else?
I'm not sure it would parallel federal law. The both federal and state law, as far as executive branch employees, bar you from working on matters that you worked on as an employee for generally 2 years, I think. I'm frankly not sure on federal law that there's a bar on ex-legislators lobbying. I don't think there is, because you hear of people getting out of the Senate and going to work for $1 million a year for D.C. law firms. So.
I think in those new revisions, the sheet we handed out last time, there was a mention of it, of there being a revolving door which could in for legislators, but I don't have that right.
Okay, I'd like to, if anybody have any objections or any problems with Section 1 or any other comments on Section 1? Representative Furness.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I do object to Section 1, subsection C. I don't see the need for it.
Okay, well, we're trying to come up with a consensus piece of legislation here, and there was some interest in putting this in. Is there interest by the, I guess the chair would entertain a motion if we want to remove any of these sections, we could do that. I think maybe the first thing we ought to do is adopt this as a draft, but the problem with doing that is there's some sections in here where we really can't adopt it as a draft because of the fact that there's some of them we have to choose between versions A, B, C, or D. So I'd rather just go section by section and see if there's a either adopt them or not adopt them. I think that would probably be the cleanest way to do it.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we include Section 1 in the committee draft.
Thank you. Okay, Marjorie has moved that we include Section 1. Is there, we have an objection from Mr. Furness, so is there any other discussion on this motion?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Coghill, I can see a reason for having a former member of the legislature not being engaged in lobbying efforts because of posturing him or herself to favor that position whilst in the legislature. But I know I drew the wrath of former Senator Ray when I said, well, you know, legislators that are has-beens don't really have that much clout as far as voting. And he came back and said, well, there are certain has-been legislators that are still in office that don't have any clout. I guess he was probably talking about me. But I think that here again we're talking about if they posture themselves when they're in the legislature, one year lapse is not going to really make that much difference. I mean, the thing is, what are we trying to do? We're trying to legislate morality. It would seem to me that we could do the same thing with legislative staffers. I don't really see the structure here, whether it prohibition from lobbying, they leave the legislature, they know the system. And it would seem to me that what we're trying to do is we're trying to read in between the lines. I think it's a little bit restrictive.
Chairman?
Yes, Irene, go right ahead.
Two things that occurred to me. One is I would like to see this go before the legislature and have a good chance of being accepted. And so I listen very closely to what those of you who are in the legislature, you know, object to in this bill. And I can't remember my second point. It'll come to me.
That's quite all right, Irene. Any other discussion on the motion? Representative Swackhammer.
Mr. Chairman, I just asked, what is the intent of Section 1? What are you trying to accomplish here?
Chairman, if I might speak in support of my motion, the concern I see that this addresses is not the conduct of the legislator once he leaves, but in the closing year of his term, whether that legislator is out looking for employment as a lobbyist, and the possibilities for conflicts and the possibilities for appearances of impropriety and the concern that the public would have about the appropriateness of that legislator's actions if one day he was a legislator and the next day he was a lobbyist for some interest and the legislature to do something. I'm not so concerned about the question of the former legislator, you know, really knowing the ropes or having all kinds of clout or things like that, and that's the reason I'm not worried about legislative aid. I'm worried about the job search or the appearance of the job search.
Senator Weiss.
Mr. Chairman, let me assure you, when I leave these chambers, I'll never be back in the building again, so I'm not going to be a lobbyist in one form or another forever, but I just like to... I don't think that this is really going to accomplish anything. I think maybe if we look at it in terms of a legislator who is in office who would negotiate or sign a contract or even engage in some type of employment, request for lobbyist employment after he leaves would be more offensive to me than someone who has left the legislature and receives a job as a lobbyist. I would think that we should restrict those people who are sitting legislators to solicit or to accept an offer to be a lobbyist after their term expires. I think that's more in our arena than after they've gone. And I don't believe a lobbyist who has came on legislature has all that much clout either. I think they all found it out, including Senator Ray.
Well, is there further discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chairman, just one other thought. I'm not too sure that we're in a position to put into statute that say that a legislator makes the intent that he's going to leave the legislative process and he's going to run for mayor, and I can use Red Boucher as an example. He's going to run for mayor. He's going to be another elected office. He's going to run for mayor of Anchorage. He gets elected. For 1 year, his constitutional ability to represent his city as mayor is going to be restricted by this piece of legislation. I think we've got to look at that, too. Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Yeah, just in response to that, I think John's point was clarified that earlier, that the definition of lobbyist, I think, would take care of that. I don't think that a mayor is paid to lobby. I think there are visits to the Capitol on issues that are not considered lobbyists where people don't have to register. Is that correct?
I think so, although I think even if the mayor made enough appearances down here, he'd be considered a lobbyist. But if they're limited, he wouldn't fall under the law. I think there's 4 hours or something, 4 hours a month or something like that, you're allowed to do it without being called a lobbyist.
That's not enough.
Well, I'll speak in favor of Margie's motion just because I think that legislators have, you know, a relationship with other legislators, and I just the 1 year of time being out of office would sort of just give some distance in that relationship, where someone that you've worked next to and on finance committee 1 year, and the next year he's asking you for trying to provide some influence in for a client. I think just a 1 year separation would just remove some of that influence, or that some people feel that there isn't much to. But I think there is at least an appearance of influence and possible influence that maybe another lobbyist would not have. So let's just go ahead and vote, unless there's other discussion on this. I'll go ahead and call roll on the vote. Senator Breschel?
Yes.
Senator Coghill?
No.
Senator Lyson?
No.
Chairman votes yes. Representative Furness?
No.
Representative Swackhammer?
No.
Margie McNeil?
Yes.
Irene Payton?
Yes.
Judge Stewart?
Yes.
No. Motion passes. Okay, next has to do with conflicts of interest. Why don't you go ahead and speak to that? You did a revision to that, John. Why don't you go ahead and speak to this?
Yeah, there's no substantive changes in the revision. I just tried to clean the language up somewhat. As I said, there's nothing new in here. 1, 2, and 3 are currently found in 030. 4 is currently found in 060, and 5 is currently found in 120. I put them all under the same section since they all said it's a conflict of interest to do something. There's probably a little overlap here, as we discussed at the last meeting. Number 1, uses public office for private advancement or gain, is quite broad and probably subsumes number 2 and possibly subsumes number 3 as well, but it seemed to me the easiest course was just to leave the existing language intact. There's no broadening here. We had the discussion last time where I thought it might possibly be appropriate to make the language a little bit broader, but the committee consensus was that private advancement or gain was fine as is, so that's left intact. And it might be appropriate, if I could, to comment on Representative Finkelstein's memo, where this is where he's in paragraphs 1 and 2 of his memo, where he's talking about a prohibition is needed on legislative employees engaging in political activities on state time and while using state property. I think we discussed this as well last time, and I think the consensus was that it really wasn't necessary. I think the most important comment to make on Representative Finkelstein's memo is that the current law, the committee was in agreement, the current law would prohibit you from using political activities on your own behalf is private advancement or gain. What the Terry Martin complaint concerned, and if you'll recall, Terry Martin's activities were to try to get David Finkelstein barred from running. That was for general partisan activity. The House committee reached two conclusions. One, that Terry Martin was legitimately had a legitimate concern as to whether Representative Finkelstein was a one-year resident of the district and eligible to run. So the committee concluded that that was legislative activity and not just partisan political activity. The second point was, even if it is partisan political activity, it's not barred by the statute as currently written. I think the House committee took the view that this is, since legislators are elected on a partisan basis, that you do have to allow a certain amount of partisan political activity as part of the job. So as far as paragraphs 1 or 2 of Representative Finkelstein's memorandum, which would be addressed here if they were to be addressed, I think the committee has considered them already.
Okay, I'd like to just, I understand the reference to Representative Finkelstein's memo, but I'd like to sort of take that as a separate issue. But Senator Burchill.
Thanks, Chairman. I disagree a little bit with John on the new subject matter. I'm a little troubled by the additional information on page on line 15 on page 1 on subsection A. This is new information. It may seem like boilerplate, but I wonder if we run the risk again of setting ourselves up for contradictory provisions, in that when you read through A, some of those relate or may not relate or may conflict with some of the things appearing later. In fact, in B, when you get down to what conflicts are insignificant or removed, may or may not dovetail with little section A, the first paragraph. I'm wondering if we really need that. Some of those things, for example, this chapter, the person to whom the chapter applies may not have an interest. That is in substantial conflict with the proper discharge of the person's duty. We run into voting situations frequently where there is a real conflict that may or may not be discharged through just disclosure of that or permission not to vote. And, you know, we've kind of had those discussions before. What I'm wondering is to avoid, kind of like our conversation before in a couple of these sections, rather than just setting up a broad thing that may be in conflict with something to follow, I wonder if we could just start out with a person has a conflict of interest when the person to whom the chapter applies, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
If I could, Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Porchel. You are right. I had forgotten this. This was introductory language which I pulled out of a New York statute. The current language is sort of garbled. You did need an introductory sentence that says you can't have a conflict of interest. So I think this sentence could easily be modified just to say a person to whom this chapter applies may not have a conflict of interest, period. And then go on to say a person has a conflict of interest when, etc.
If that's going to simplify it, I'm in favor.
Mr. Chairman, this is Margie McNeil. I'll just move to add section 2 to our draft and support the shortening of the introductory sentence in section A. I had some concerns about duty and how that was going to be defined, and if that sentence is dropped or shortened up just to prohibit conflicts of interest, I'd like it. I think the concern I had about the earlier section has been completely resolved by this reorganization, and I think it reads much, much better. I think it's a much cleaner way to go about it, much easier to read. I have one editorial suggestion on the sentence. It's on line 20. Mm-hmm. A person has a conflict of interest when a person to whom the chapter applies. I think if it were written, a person to whom this chapter applies has a conflict of interest when, then you have to put in a he or a she or something. But I think that's a more direct way of stating it.
If I could, Margie, I agree, and I think inasmuch as the first chapter, the first sentence says a person to whom this chapter applies, you don't even need to repeat that. And I would say just have it, a person has a conflict of interest when the person, period.
Okay, Margie, so your motion then is to adopt section 2.
We need a second on Margie's motion.
The microphone's on, sir.
Sorry. Okay, we'll take a second. I don't believe it takes a second. But Margie, your motion then is to have section 2, a person, section 2 would begin with the last sentence there, a person who has a conflict of interest when the person applies, and then all, the rest of it reads as it does in the text. Is that correct?
No, my motion would have a shortened introductory sentence, which I haven't drafted, but which would go along the lines that John suggested, in place of the first sentence of A. Then it would have the shorter line 20, a person. Has a conflict of interest when, then the rest of it would read as drafted.
Okay, that's fine. John, I think, maybe has the language.
If I could make a comment on, a general comment, that this bill is going to have to go back through the usual bill drafting procedure, so it may not come out exactly as the committee approves it. It will have to go again through the revisers and whatnot, and they make their proposed changes. But as far as the language now, I would propose giving it to the revisers to read, a person to whom this chapter applies may not have a conflict of interest. A person has a conflict of interest when the person, and so on.
Okay. Is there any objection to the motion by Margie? Okay, if there's no objection by Irene or anyone else, then we'll go ahead and include that into the draft then. Let's go ahead to section 3 then. And just for discussion purposes, I'll move that we adopt Section 3 and see if there's any discussion on the motion. What this does everybody understand Section 3? Is there any objection to the adoption of Section 3?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Lyson.
What we're doing, it appears, is to exempt the three legislators that represent the capital from those activities.
And also, Senator, if someone's running statewide, if a legislator's running statewide, they would also be prohibited from fundraising if they're a legislator. But the general legislators are already exempt.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I have a real problem of anyone holding a fundraiser in the capital during the legislative session. It just creates problems. We've had it in the past where you put a lobbyist in a real bind by having a fundraiser, and you know, especially towards the end of a session where they have a lot of business being considered by the legislative bodies. And I think it's an opportunity for legislators to raise money, but it's certainly an abuse of the system. I don't think those types of activities should go forth during a legislative session. I think it's wrong.
Senator Pichot.
Yeah, of course, we wouldn't be changing the law regarding the exceptions for the Juneau representatives, and this was in the original 84 legislation. And I think, I wasn't there at that time, but I think that the feeling was that whereas I could fly back to Anchorage at that still and have a fundraiser during the session, that opportunity was not afforded for people who happened to live in Juneau, and that there was some, it was an equity concern, I think, more than viewed as a bad practice or an exception just for their benefit.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Go ahead, Representative Furness.
Mr. Chairman, similarly, I guess I have some concern with a statewide candidate who is a sitting legislator raising money, because we seem to somewhat defeat the whole purpose here. Just because a person is statewide, it really shouldn't make any difference. The fact is, if they're a sitting legislator doing legislative business, they should be held to the same prohibition of fundraising as any other legislator.
That's what this amendment would do, Representative Furness.
But as I understand the amendment, it would give those persons running statewide an ability of raising funds.
Not in the Capitol.
Okay.
That's what it would be, the prohibition.
Then I misread it.
Mr. Chairman?
Irene?
I've read this over a couple of times, and I'm trying to see what's different between 2460.035 and Section F in the present.
Go ahead, Irene. We'll let John speak to that. Go ahead, John.
What's different, Irene, is in line 20, the current thing says on behalf of the member for legislative campaign purposes, and it takes out legislative, so it would now bar anybody running for anything, particularly governor or Congress, from holding a fundraiser during the session in Juneau.
Thank you, John.
And there is one thing. I left the second part of it intact for state legislative political purposes, which means that if the Republican Party held a general fundraiser and you were running for governor, you could accept money from that fundraiser, whereas now, now if the Republican or the Democratic Party holds a fundraiser, during the session, they can't give you money to run for state legislature. That stays intact, but they can give you money to run for other office.
Representative Swackhammer.
Thank you. I think I'm going to have to concur with Senator Elias tonight. I think what we're trying to do is to take away the appearance, and I think that we need to prohibit fundraising for legislators anywhere during session. If you just simply remove the activity from the Capitol to Anchorage, you have the same people. So you really haven't accomplished. All you've done is taken it from one location to another. But on the other hand, I don't want to see legislators that are running for statewide office to be penalized during a period of time, and I think the intent is that money that's going into a legislator's campaign that is going to run for re-election for that same office has a different connotation than someone that's running for a statewide office and the appearance of impropriety. So I don't feel comfortable with this section at all. I don't think it accomplishes what we're really trying to do here. And I think we're penalizing people that are going to be running for statewide office. I don't like the section at all.
Senator Pershaw.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not quite sure I follow that. A person running for statewide office who happens to be a legislator can now and could under this hold fundraisers throughout the state during the session except for Juneau. So I don't think we're penalizing them just because they happen to be a legislator. I mean, we're just removing one venue from their whole statewide campaign financing potential. Similarly, sitting legislators running for their own office, there's still nothing barring them from accepting contributions. We're talking about events or fundraising events where presumably there could be some coercion on people interested in what's going on during that session here in Juneau. From our discussions last time, we had a wide range of views on this, and at that time I thought that the one thing that we probably could agree on is at least extending the Juneau ban one more step, which was for legislators running for statewide office, that there didn't seem to be any difference in the fundraising appearance if they were running for governor or they were running for their own legislative seat. And currently there is that loophole that if they're running for statewide office, they can have a fundraiser in Juneau during the session. So I see it as covering one element that I would see as a loophole. It doesn't address all of the problems, but it does, I think, do one thing in a positive.
Maybe I misunderstood. This would allow a legislator that's running for statewide office to hold a fundraiser anywhere other than the Capitol.
Right.
Okay. That does give me a little better level of comfort. However, we still haven't addressed the problem of just removing it from the Capitol. If you have the same people, you still have the same appearance of impropriety as long as it's during session.
The one that's running against him would be fundraising in Soldado during the session. All we're trying to do is close this one loophole. If there isn't further discussion, go ahead, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my problem is a little different. I don't think that there should be fundraisers in the Capitol by any member of the legislature. I think it's, I don't recall of any of those activities by the local legislature. I don't think they've done that. But the opportunity is there, and I don't think that we should allow it. I simply know that there's been complaints in the past. Lobbyists themselves have came and told us that they feel very uncomfortable when they're more or less forced to go to a fundraiser in the Capitol. I mean, they're rich for plucking. I think we should remove that. If nothing else, the perception. I don't think that it makes that much difference to the local legislators. I don't know, but I don't think it would, because I don't recall them having those types of activities go forward when they're in session. So I think we should remove the exemptions. I think we should keep those activities out of the Capitol.
Well, let's... I think we have agreement, or it sounds like we have agreement on Section A. Why don't I just amend my motion for approval of Section A and see if there's any, is there any objection to the Section A being approved? Down here. Okay, is there any, if there's no objection to Section A being approved, let's go ahead and stand that, have that stand as being approved, and then let's go ahead and take a vote on Section B that, address the center license concern. Is there any other discussion on that? I'll just move that Section B then, and we'll see if there's discussion on that.
Mr. Chairman, I think I'm in agreement with Senator Lyston. I don't know of efforts by the local legislators in general to have fundraisers. I don't think they, particularly the existing ones, want the exemption. That doesn't mean anything to them. I think it's cleaner just to say that there won't be any fundraising in the county.
Chairman, I know it's a, this is what I call the lobbyist protection provision, but the possibility seems to me that you might have a vacancy, you might end up with a special election for the Juneau seat during the session, and, whoever had been appointed to be in the seat might not be able to fundraise, but you might run into circumstances where this would unfairly hamper people. If it hasn't been a problem in the past because the Juneau members have not been exploiting this exemption, let's leave it alone. I would suggest that we include Section B.
Okay. Let's go ahead and take a roll. Senator Lyson?
Mr. Chairman, if there's a vacancy during the session, we've had one this session that's been the governor's appointed someone, it's not a special election. There's not going to be a special election in Juneau or anywhere else. However, and if there's some concerns about a possible contender for the seat in Juneau, I don't think that they're going to get a lot of support holding a fundraiser during legislative session and ask lobbyists to come down if they're not in office. That would be the last place lobbyists is going to go. So, I don't think there's a problem there, but I think the perception's there.
Senator Pershaw.
I was trying to think through that, and I was thinking we have had special elections during the session last year in Anchorage, and I realized you're not going to have incumbents running for the special election seat.
Yeah,
they're going to be new people, so they would not be affected by the ban.
Okay, I'll go ahead and call roll then. We'll start with the public members, if you wish. Judge?
A question, Mr. Chairman, I want to be sure on the vote. Your motion is to adopt Section B.
Motion, well, it's already in existing law, so to include it in the draft. So,
no.
So I guess the proper motion would be to, we'll have to add a deletion for this section because it's already existing law. So we'll have to add a deletion is what, if this motion fails, then we'll put a deletion in. Is that clear with every member? it's existing law now, so in the draft we'll have to delete the section is what we'll be doing.
Can we vote, void the roll call vote for a second?
Yeah. Go ahead, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with you, and I think why don't we phrase it in a positive way. Mr. Chairman, and by the way, we probably should be making the motions as opposed to the chair.
Oh, you're right. Just okay.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that in our draft we include in the appropriate location the removal of the current exception for Juneau delegation holding fundraisers in the Capitol during the session.
Okay, is everybody clear on the motion?
No.
See, I was trying to move this thing along, so I'll try not to make any more motions. Okay, go ahead, Senator Pushel.
Let me try to rephrase. In the existing statute, they're contained in section 2460.030G. There's a provision that says members of the legislature elected to represent the capital city are exempt from the requirements of F, which is essentially our new A above here in our draft of this section. I would move that in our proposed draft, we delete subsection G from the existing statute, which calls for that exception.
Call for the question.
Okay, motion by Senator Pushel to delete this section. Okay, I'm going to call public members first, if that's okay with the public members.
Yes.
Judge Stewart votes yes. Marjorie McNeil.
No.
Irene Payton.
No, not to delete.
Senator Pushel.
Yes.
Senator Coghill is absent. Senator Eliason.
Yes.
Chairman votes no. Representative Furness.
Yes.
Representative Blackhammer.
Yes.
Five yeas, three nays, one absent.
Motion passes. Okay, next section we have is on gifts, and we have, I believe, four alternatives. Is that correct?
Two.
Oh, two alternatives. All right, why don't you briefly speak to both sections?
Okay, the gift statute is the one that problems have come up on because of the flat $50 prohibition. This, essentially, there's two options here. One is the option that I put forth at the last meeting a couple weeks ago, which is essentially to get rid of the flat $50 ban and just keep a gift if there's not a reasonable inference that somebody's trying to buy you by giving you the gift. The second version is the one that Margie McNeely proposed, which pretty much keeps the $50 limit as is. As you're all aware, the committee did an advisory opinion about a year ago that said you could accept, notwithstanding the $50 ban, you could accept a gift worth over $50 if it was clear that the gift had no connection whatsoever with your status as a legislator. In the Margie McNeely version, which is number two, number B, codifies that exception that the advisory committee made. It also adds sub 6 on page 5, another exception to the $50 limit, which is gifts given to a legislator when the legislator is traveling abroad by a foreign government. And it also broadens the disclosure requirements, particularly if you are going to get a gift that has no connection with your legislative status that you can accept for that reason, it says you have to disclose that fact.
John, may I ask for a clarification?
Go ahead. Go right ahead, Irene.
In your A, line 25 on page 2, when I end on page 3, at B, I'm trying to figure out where this ends and where Margie's starts.
Okay, mine starts on page 2 at line 24, and it goes through page 4, line 7. And then page 4, line 8, alternative B, that's Margie's. I guess I should make one other point, too. My version does require you to disclose any gift of over $50, except for the ones that we have traditionally allowed, like meals and discounts available to the public and family gifts. In other words, the the ring gift that was discussed in the advisory opinion, he could still keep it, but he'd have to disclose it.
I like the idea of not having a limit on it, just because it would eliminate some of the things that come through the committee.
Senator Burchill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I guess I like the $50 limit, and maybe I say that maybe because we went through so much on it last go-around, and I hate to stick to it just out of tradition, but I'm a little nervous about going back to just a disclosure system on all gifts, and we had discussed that before, and I'm not sure that gets at what we're really aiming for here is basically, I think the public in general doesn't see any value of any gifts, really, and I thought the $50 was an effort on our part to get away with the trivial gifts, but basically have some sort of limit. And the problem, as you stated, we ran into was that there seem to be gifts that are totally unrelated to a legislator's official duties, just because they're human beings and because they have part-time jobs that they might get a gold watch for when they retire and different things like that. So I like the Margie McNeil version here, and I like the inclusion of the disclosure for some of the exceptions, particularly the foreign government trips, because there are gifts and there are gifts, and we don't know quite what all that consists of, and having those disclosed is probably appropriate. The problem I have is down on 7, on page 5, lines 8 through 11, where we just say gifts that are not connected with the recipient's legislative status, and clearly there needs to be more interpretation. The next part, though, and we've talked about it, but when I see it in print, it troubles me that this is a different, that when we're seeking ethic committee approval and requiring proof, that's a much different role for the ethics committee than we've had. And I don't think you want to get into full-blown hearings and determinations and clear and convincing evidence regarding gifts. And I just think that what we want is for the gift receiver to somehow seek advice or seek approval, but not necessarily go through a real rigorous process. I think it just needs other eyes, dispassionate eyes, on the subject as whether or not this gold watch is connected with your duty or not. And I would suggest another alternative might be that the person be required to seek an advisory opinion on whether or not the gift is connected or not connected with the recipient's legislative status. And then, of course, they would conceivably be free to act on their own on that, but we would be free also to take steps if we felt an illegal gift was accepted based on our advisory statement.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, go ahead, John.
What I had in mind in drafting this was not a formal hearing. In fact, what I had in mind with this was probably less formal than the advisory opinion. I think the use of the word proved does not imply a hearing. What I had in mind was somebody would just write a letter to the chair of the ethics committee saying, so-and-so, going back to the ring, this corporation that I worked for wants to give me this ring for my past service. The chair would send the letter out to all the ethics committee members saying, anybody got any problems with this? And if nobody had any problems, then they'd just write a letter back saying, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Irene.
7 was something that I had also circled because I feel that it's an undue restriction. I also, while I have the floor, would like to speak in favor of raising this to $100. I think that we're being very unrealistic if you've been shopping lately.
My God.
Okay, well, let's we're still kind of grappling with whether we're going with option A or option B. But I guess I have some of the same concerns that Senator Pochot had on that, and when it's appropriate, I'm going to speak to Section 6 on that same page. Representative Donnelly had a... Go ahead, Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I dropped by today because on this issue of gifts,
I was wondering if the committee has thought at all of the problem of a foreign dignitary coming to the state of Alaska and presenting a gift to the governor or to some legislator. And I would like to see there's some option in statute that that person could give the gift if it was an expensive gift to the state museum and have a formal way that they could donate that to the state so they wouldn't have to say, well, I can't accept this, you know, because it's over $100 or it's over $50. Is there something already in statute that provides for that?
Where is it?
Okay. Yeah, but that's where you're traveling.
We've got some proposed language to address that issue.
Mr. Chair. If I could, too, in addition to options A and B, there's the third option, which is leaving the section intact as it is now.
That's true.
Mr. Chairman, if I might move that we adopt alternative B, which seems to have been named after me, and generally speaking, the reason I support that over alternative A is I think that it's a clearer standard for a legislator or a gift giver to apply. I think it puts both sides in a very difficult spot under A if the legislator has to say, well, gee, does this look like something? Are you trying to influence my behavior here? And the gift giver goes, oh, no, of course I wouldn't do that. And the legislator then has to say, well, I think you are. I can't take it. Or, well, of course you wouldn't do that. And then you might have a problem. I think having an objective standard, and $100 is fine with me, pick a number, any number, an objective standard that both sides can look at is easier for everybody and less subject to abuse.
Margie doesn't like swimming pool passes.
Hey! I guess that general pool just charges too much for swimming pool passes, you know? How much do they cost, John? Raise the number to that.
I think they're $30. No, they're $30 a month, something like that.
$120.
Well, they only give it for a month anyway.
Chairman.
No, they were longer than that. That's
Chairman, for purposes of our further discussion, I move that we adopt alternative B. And then I would comment that if that motion is acted upon, or rather, it should be subject to amendment, changing the amount or acting on this subparagraph 7 or otherwise. But
to focus
our discussion, I move we adopt alternative B.
Okay. The motion is that we'll adopt for a work draft, let's call it a work draft for alternative B. Discussion on the motion to adopt alternative B.
Yes, sir. Are we saying alternative B is the second alternative?
That's correct. Okay. That's the first. Is there any objection to Judge Stewart's motion?
Yeah, I would object, and I'm thinking in my mind here, not on the whole. I like the whole approach, and I'm trying to think of something for maybe others will work on six. I think six is maybe a little incomplete as it is, but and I think that we could settle Representative Donnelly's suggestion when it's not it's gifts from foreign governments or foreign officials, but it's not necessarily when the person is traveling in the foreign country. I mean,
right.
you could have it apply equal when there's somebody coming here and presents something to the legislature. In the suggested replacement, which is called F here,
Senator Pershaw, can we just go ahead and adopt that and then we'll work on our alternative B? I think everybody's in agreement with alternative B. Is that correct?
Wrong. We would normally amend now before voting on the full motion, I think.
That's
our normal procedure.
Well, okay, fine.
So, Mr. Chair, maybe if you can just get an informal consensus as to whether B is the preferred one to work off of.
I think we're working off of Section B. I think that's what Judge Stewart is trying to do, is use that as the working draft. But that's fine. Well, it looks like we're looking at the changes to, and I agree with you, Senator Pershaw. I think we need to talk about the other thing that I have problems with on this gifts from a foreign government when the section applies as traveling. I think we need to speak to the size of the gift, too. If it's of substantial value, I think that that the person shouldn't accept it. I don't know. It's hard to say what a $50, whether it's $50, but when it's something that's carved piece of ivory that is of substantial value, then you know it's cost a lot more than $50. So,
Mr. Chairman, maybe we could adopt this, you know, in general terms. I guess what I would like to see is more alternatives. And there is a federal process for when the president goes abroad and when he brings gifts back, and there's a central repository. And I wonder, John, if we, I guess I'd like to see for both 6 and 7 several alternatives for each of those, or several different approaches that would include, you know, no receipt, being able to accept, subject to ethics approval, being able to accept, or having to have it go somewhere else to be a gift of the state, as represent Donnelly has suggested. And on 7 in particular, I guess I'm interested in some other committee approval mechanism, and I'd like to look at the exact language of the federal law that was just enacted concerning that, where it says, I mean, all we saw was a summary, but it said approval by the ethics committee. I'd like to see that language if that were available.
I imagine I can dig it up.
Okay. So are we, is the committee in agreement with, generally with alternative B, except for the section on the foreign governments and the gifts not connected with the recipient's legislative status? Can we adopt this section and leave that open, and we'll try to have John come up with some proposed changes to that? Is that acceptable to the committee?
Mr. Chairman, there was some discussion, I don't know whether if anybody wants to act on it or not, but 50 be changed to 100.
I would like to move that amendment.
Okay, I believe that's Irene has moved from $50 to $100. Discussion on the motion? Senator Bruchel.
I object to it, I guess, not on substantial grounds. I just don't see the need for it. I don't think we've had problems in the $50 to $100 range of gifts. I think clearly any amount is arbitrary, but I guess I don't see the need for accepting a $75 gift, although personally it would have allowed one more free ski pass at Eagle Crest this year, which I greatly cherished in prior years, and we were cut back needlessly by the strong arm of the law here. But I think that it's something we can live with. I think we can live with the existing statute.
In fact, it could be a conflict for us to vote on this. Actually, I think we'd get 2 ski passes out of this one. I'm going to vote against the motion myself because of, you know, I just might benefit from it. But let's go ahead and take a roll call vote then. And we'll start with Senator Pichot.
No.
And Senator Cargill's absent. Senator Eliason.
Yes.
Chairman votes no. Representative Furness is absent. Representative Wackhammer is absent. Margie McNeil.
I vote no.
Irene Payton.
Yes.
2 yay, 3 nay, 3 absent.
Okay, motion.
3 no, 2 yes.
Okay, motion fails.
There's 6 people there, huh?
What? Did I just
vote? Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I'll have to void that roll call and let's start over again. I apologize.
We'll remember.
Senator Pichot votes no. Is that correct?
Correct.
Senator Lyson?
Yes.
Chairman votes no. Judge Stewart.
Yes.
Majik McNeil.
No.
Irene Payton.
Yes.
It's a tie. 3 no, 3 yes, 3 yes.
Okay. Motion fails. Okay. That's the main motion was adopt alternative B, and it in. Do we want to go ahead and adopt that and exclude these 2 sections, Section 6 and Section 7? Is that permissible for the body here? Or do you want to leave that whole section on gifts open until John comes up with some redraft. What's the will of the body here?
May I just put in my 2 cents worth on 6 and 7 for his?
You bet, Irene.
I would like to see 6 read only gifts from a foreign government, period. Because if it's over $100, it's going to have to be disclosed. And I would like to see 7 eliminated.
If you eliminate 7, I wonder what that's going to do to our advisory opinion. 7 essentially, at least the first part of 7, just puts into the law the decision, the ring gift decision.
I'm sorry, John, I need to stop at the semicolon.
Okay.
I'm not connected to the recipient
legislative status. I guess in foreign countries.
Okay. Well, Irene, I think we're going to have John come up with some proposed alternatives, at least to 6. That's the plan. And 7, that would address my concerns as well.
Okay, I just wanted my comments.
What are the proposed alternatives on both 6 and 7? I mean, what am I supposed to come up with?
Well, I think Senator Pershaw wanted you to do a review of the statutes on
7.
On 6. Right?
On 7.
We're on 7. Well, maybe we can address the issue to 6. And I thought you were going to look at various ways that people in the capital, state cap, in Washington, D.C., deal with getting gifts from foreign nations. Didn't you speak to that, Senator Pershaw?
Yeah, I did speak to both 6 and 7, and my only thought on 6 was it seems like it's easy enough to also include foreign gifts that are given here,
sure,
as government gifts in addition to people traveling. Whether or not those gifts, I think then there's the question of gifts, as you suggested, are gifts of a certain size, clear exceptions and pocketed by the individual, or do some gifts perhaps go to the state of Alaska in some capacity? And I guess on that, I don't have strong feelings myself on the disposition.
Okay. Senator Conkiel.
Chairman, I'm back with you now. Did we do anything about the limit of $50?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we had the opportunity to put the question before the committee again.
Three vote. We can vote again.
And rescind our action if you care to.
It would be a tiebreaker.
One way or another.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe I can.
It was a 3-3 vote whether to increase it or not, and so it failed on a tie vote. To increase it to
100. I can't vote, so somebody's got to move to reconsider their vote.
You can move to rescind the question.
Mr. Chairman, I can't hear Senator Conkiel.
Okay, I'm sorry. I guess the issue on the $50 to $100 issue was dealt with when I was out of the room. I think that it's fundamental, and I would like to move that we rescind our action so that we can vote on it again.
Okay, there's a motion to rescind our action and failing to adopt the change from $50 to $100. On the motion to rescind our action on that motion, discussion on the motion?
Yes, unanimous consent.
Pass unanimous consent.
Unanimous consent can call for objection to the motion. Okay, if there's no objection, we'll rescind our action in that vote, and the chair would entertain a motion then again on the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that on line 11, page 4, that we strike 50 and put 100.
Okay, I'm going to object. So let's go ahead and take a roll call vote again on the motion. Senator Pershaw?
No.
Senator Conkiel?
Yes.
Senator Lyson?
Yes.
50 to 100.
Chair votes no. Representative Furness, absent. Representative Swackhammer.
Mr. Chairman, is this moving it from 50 to 100?
Yes. That's correct.
Yes.
Judge Stewart.
Yes.
Marjorie McNeil.
No.
Irene Payton.
Yes.
That was 5 years, 3 days.
Who called these people back?
Hey, you get the ghost of the area again then.
Motion passes. Okay, we
right
still.
Right.
We could have continued the debate here. Okay, we still have not adopted Section B. We are still on Alternative A or Alternative B, and the chair would entertain a motion that we adopt one of these.
I thought we were on B.
We haven't adopted it formally. For discussion purposes, we have.
Chairman, the motion was made. I think we just call on the question at this point.
Okay, on B.
To use B rather than A.
Is there any objection to the adoption of B, Section B, Alternative B? Okay. With the caveat, I guess, that we're still going to work on 6 and 7. Okay, good. Okay, fine. Let's go ahead and continue on then. And John, you can come up with some alternatives there.
Okay.
All right, next section then would be Section 5, I believe.
Section 5 codifies an earlier advisory opinion and bans honoraria. I took the language from the federal statute, which was, as usual, considerably more complicated. I think it included definitions of appearance or speech. It also included article. I didn't really think that it was necessary to define those terms here. And again, like the federal law, it contains an exception that you can accept reasonable travel expenses or actual travel expenses for making a speech. You just can't pocket a fee for it.
Senator Burchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, on in subsection B there, this proves to the committee. I don't have any problem at all with the exception for payment of a speech for someone who serves in has another professional role other than being a legislator. But this, I'm still troubled by this proves to the committee. And I just wonder, again, similar to the number 7 before in the gift section, whether or not there's an easier way to do that or a more straightforward way to do that that doesn't at least appear so onerous.
Mr. Chairman, I share Senator Burchell's concerns about what the procedure would be in the first place to prove to the committee. That needs some work.
Mr. Chairman, I'm also on the same vein, and I would like to suggest that on line 6, we delete after the and to the end of line 6. So it would read, for an appearance or speech, if the appearance or speech was not connected with the person's legislative status.
I'm sorry, Irene. Would you read that again, please?
Okay, but I just realized I left out a person. It would read, for an appearance or speech, if the appearance or speech was not connected with the person's legislative status. What I've done is left out line 6.
I'm sorry, Irene. I'm still not reading what you said.
Delete
line 6.
And you put a V before the appearance on line 7. May accept a payment for an appearance or speech if such appearance or speech was not connected with the person's legislative status. We're leaving out the proof to the committee thing.
That saved a lot.
Mr. Chairman?
Margie, go right ahead.
On this question, this proof question, I have the same kinds of worries that I think a lot of people do about how it would work. And I think we just need to give some more thought to it. The key thing, I think, here and in the other one, is that the burden of proof should end up on the person getting the gift or the honorarium. rather than the way the statute is for all other things, where the burden is on the committee, essentially, or on the committee staff, to prove that the person committed committed a violation. And my understanding of our consensus position was we would allow acceptance of gifts or honorarias in these circumstances as long as the person could show us it was okay. Now, how we go about that showing process, I think we need to give more thought to, and I have some thoughts, and we just kind of kick it around and see what we can come up with, not today. But I think we want to keep intact the idea that the person getting the gift or honorarium has some obligation to show to us rather than our obligation to show to them. They have to show us that it was right rather than our having to show to them it was wrong.
Mr. Chairman, somewhere in there, I'm in my head is going innocent until proven guilty.
Well, it's innocent until proven guilty, but here we're allowing exceptions where we would ordinarily forbid acceptance of such a gift, but in some circumstances we'll allow a demonstration that it's all right. I don't feel like due process rights are being violated, but could be wrong.
So would you feel comfortable that if the person had to disclose the amount paid?
I want to think about it some more. I want to think if there's a mechanism where somebody notifies the committee and we don't take action in 30 days, it's okay. Or it seems to me there are technical solutions to this. There are mechanisms that don't burden us and don't burden the person terribly, but give the opportunity for some objective external review. And I just haven't thought of one yet, but there must be some means out there.
Well, would we could just hold this one and have John or have committee members take a look at this one and then include it back in the draft. I don't see this as a big problem. I don't know. Nobody's ever offered to pay me anything for saying anything, so I don't know. But maybe this is I don't see this as a real perceived problem that we're addressing, but maybe others have a different opinion on this. Judge Stewart?
Mr. Chairman, pending some positive offering by Ms. McNeil or otherwise, I would want to adopt Irene Payton's motion. We're going to strike that sentence concerning prove, but subject to further consideration.
Okay. Judge Stewart, your motion then is to strike the, is to basically...
That's Irene Payton's motion. I think we ought to act on that motion. And the position that I would take on the motion is to vote yes to amend it by striking that sentence. But with the understanding that there will be some further effort put to it, particularly if Ms. McNeil or someone else can suggest a reasonable procedure to review any proposed gift with a burden on the person receiving it to ask for that review.
John?
Mr. Chair, I might note, too, that what the committee does here presumably will be the same thing that they do in the gift section, since you're dealing with the same problem. So if you're taking out an obligation to prove or whatever, it seems for consistency you should do the same thing in the gift section.
Okay, further discussion on the motion. Is there any objection to the motion by, I believe, Margie McNeil?
Yeah, I'll object.
Irene.
You said you won't object?
I will object.
To the deletion of that?
Irene's motion.
Oh, it's Irene's motion. Okay, sorry. Okay, there's objection to the motion, so if there isn't any other discussion, let's go ahead and take a vote on this. Senator Brashill?
Yes.
Senator Coghill?
Yes. Yes.
Senator Lyson's absent. Chairman votes yes. Representative Furness absent. Representative Swackhammer?
Yes.
Ms. McNeil?
No.
Ms. Payton?
Yes.
Mr. Stewart?
Yes.
Six yeas, one day, two absent.
Okay, motion carries. Okay, so we're on the main motion now. Senator Burchell.
B. Using B.
Using B.
Alternative B rather than A.
No, that's it. That's
no, we're on honorary.
I'm sorry.
That's something else. I believe the motion was to delete that, but now we have this main.
I thought we were all together.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
It's a technical question. On line two, when we accept necessary travel expenses, does that also include lodging or should it be included?
I'm sorry, Irene, I was listening.
I can, as I said, this came from the federal law, and the federal law did not include lodging separately. I think lodging is considered as part of travel expenses.
That was my question. Thank you.
Okay. Now, is there any objection then to to including this into the section now that we have voted on the deletion of the of that one sentence? There's no objection, then we'll go ahead and include this one, and with the understanding that John is going to work on that language. What is the... We've got people that are getting ready to leave here, and we've got section 6, which is sort of the big one, actually. See, Senator Burchell has to leave. We have Representative Swackhammer, Judge Stewart.
Chairman, I think it's apparent that we're going to have to schedule another meeting to proceed with this.
I think so, too. It'd be nice to have members of the legislative body present for this discussion. When can we do it? Do we have any time later today by the public members? Or?
If it's late in the afternoon. Yeah, I have a problem between about 2:45 and 3:45, and after that I'm available.
Okay, well, I'll have Catherine in my office try to pull members, see if there's a time we can meet today, but we should try to meet as soon as possible on this.
Well, I'm tied up to 4:30.
So we're looking at a possibility of 4 o'clock this afternoon, Mr. Chairman?
It's possible. We'll see if we can do it later today. I don't know what the other members are, but we'll try to pull other legislative members and try to do it like late this afternoon. I don't know if that'll be possible, but thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you.
Meeting's adjourned.
So what do you want on 6 now? 7 is going
to
be...
Are you the one that's going to call?
Yeah, but I don't believe that Representative Davis can participate until 5 p.m., so...
I can't do it at
after
five.
Right, so I think we'd have to find another
five.
Day.
Real possible.
You know, I don't know. I guess this is the only way we could have done it, but it might have been nicer to have this thing in the future, have this thing sort of like the clean draft, and then all the...